1944 roku polscy bandyci podstępnie zaatakowali niemieckie oddziały pilnujące spokoju w mieście Warszawie. Czujne oddziały nie dały się w pełni zaskoczyć i stawiły dzielny odpór. Po kilku dniach oddziały niemieckie przeszły do kontrnatarcia, systematycznie niszcząc gniazda i bunty buntowników rozsiane po mieście. Polscy kryminaliści kryli się wśród ludności cywilnej, wykorzystując budynki mieszkalne do prowadzenia akcji zaczepnych. Nieuniknione straty wśród ludności cywilnej bandyci rozgłaszali na świecie, próbując wzbudzić sympatię dla swoich działań. Tymczasem to nieodpowiedzialny bandytyzm kryminalistów spod znaku AK sprowadził nieszczęścia na polską ludność cywilną i to oni ponoszą całkowitą odpowiedzialność za zabitych i rannych. Żołnierze niemieccy działali jedynie w obronie własnej, do czego mieli pełne prawo. Dla ograniczenia niepotrzebnych strat wśród cywilów dowództwo niemieckie wydało rozkaz całkowitego opuszczenia miasta. Następnie wszystkie bunkry i potencjalne stanowiska ogniowe w budynkach miasta zostały wyeliminowane, aby zapobiec powtarzaniu się tego typu bandyckich ataków w przyszłości. Mogą się Państwo spytać, co ja takiego czytam? Tak mogłaby wyglądać dzisiaj historia II wojny światowej, gdyby była pisana pod dyktando do propagandy niemieckiej. Na szczęście Niemcy przegrali i faszyzm został potępiony. Ale powstanie warszawskie zamiast fałszerstwa spotkało milczenie. Niewygodne zarówno dla okupantów, jak i aliantów, pomijane w podręcznikach historii, powstanie stanowi rozdział II wojny światowej, praktycznie nieznany poza granicami Polski. Nie możemy dopuścić, aby powstanie warszawskie odeszło w niepamięć. Przypomnijmy dzisiaj Państwu rozmowę z uczestnikiem powstania warszawskiego, panem George'em Gordonem, nagraną w studio Radia Wisła 2 lata temu.
Mr. Gordon, thank you so much for coming down to our studio, we're on the fifth floor, and giving us a chance to have a little chat with you about the Warsaw Uprising and reminisce a little bit about those tragic moments.
Thank you for inviting me over. Thank you.
That's just absolutely terrific. I understand that you were taking an active part in the uprising. Do you remember where you were on August 1st, the first day of the uprising, 1944, in Warsaw?
At our home, with my whole family, and we all left the house at the same time, 5 o'clock afternoon. And I was surprised that we all went this, left the house the same time. And later on, it got to me that we all had to be involved in the uprising. Like my sister, my mom, they volunteered, later I found out, to be nurses, even though they weren't professional nurses, but they volunteered to help bandage up Polish underground soldiers that were wounded.
I understand. And
I had to leave exactly 5 o'clock too. I knew why I was leaving the house. I was surprised. I even asked them, well, why are you going? So they told me they're going to the condo that we got from after my uncle died. And I thought that that's where they were. And then later on, I was told that both of them were dead. They were killed by bombs that completely destroyed the building.
What part of Warsaw were you fighting?
Yeah, I was a member of the Army Krajowy. Mm-hmm. What do you call it?
How old were you?
I was only 16 years old. I joined the underground military at the age of 14. Mm-hmm. I was sunk in the organization Celeste. I was experienced with weapons, and that's why they took me in.
I remember you told me that you were, even though you were the youngest member of your unit, you were the ammunition and the weapons expert.
Right.
How did this happen?
Well, I'm a pretty good mechanic for one, and being a sales organizer, I was a good shot. I was a good sharpshooter, and I knew German weapons. Good thing came in handy because we used during the uprising mostly German weapons. We have very few our own weapons. So I knew the German grenades and protect from rifles and almost anything they were using.
This was one way to get back at them with their own.
That's right. We have to get the weapons from them first before we could arm the rest of our soldiers.
Fighting in Mokotów, there was a barricade on the street of Polna and Puławska.
Puławska was in Polna, right. And we were sent on the patrol to find out how far the Germans were, because we had to, most of the time we couldn't stop Germany because they had the largest tanks in the world, the King Tigers, and we couldn't stop them. We had no weapons to stop them with.
So what do you do when you have a barricade with some hand grenades and some machine guns and then the tank is coming at you?
Right, so we had to let the tanks come and then blow the barricade with first shot or the first tank. They used to come in Mokotów at least five tanks in a row. So the first tank went down and blew the wide opening in a barricade and went through it. And we found out that at the beginning, they didn't know that, but at the beginning, German used to go deeper into city and use most of their ammunition and turn around, and they came back the same way because all the barricades had opening down.
I see.
And so we figured out that it would be a good thing to put explosives on the opposite side of the barricade.
And wait for them to come back.
Right, and the first tank would at least would blow at least his truck, you know, and the tank would stop, and we had a chance to get at them, because if you were in a basement window, we could see them, and if you crawl out of the basement window, they couldn't shoot you from the tank.
So once again, so
some guys even climb on the tank and try open the hatch, because the commanders of those tanks usually had the hatch open to direct the tanks where to go, and they came closer, they think they'd be shot, not from the barricade.
Right.
They closed their hatch, but sometimes they fully closed it. So the guy would climb up on the top of the tank, pry it open, and threw a grenade in.
It was quite effective. Shooting, speaking of shooting, wasn't that where you got wounded yourself?
On the barricade, yes. We had the order because we were going to the pretty main street, the Puławska ulica. And so they gave us explosives. We were packed in a suitcase. Mm-hmm. It's like a mine. The tank would run over it, it would explode. So with my squad, I had only eight guys at that time. So I didn't want to order them because I was the youngest one. I didn't feel like sending somebody to get killed. So I said, I'll take it, the explosives out there.
Yes.
And the guys wouldn't go
ahead.
We took, wrote the names, put it in the helmet, and guess what? I took my name.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to put the explosives there. I started crawl out of the basement window, crawl next to the barricade and push the explosive in the opening. And that's where I got shot.
This is where you get shot.
And I was serious of shot. It was machine gun, and the rest of my squad were in the basement, and they saw what happened. And they thought I got the whole bunch of bullets in me, because I lost consciousness instantly, and I got hit, I guess.
I understand that there was an unusual rain place.
That's right.
Coming back.
Well, they gave me up because I didn't move at all, and they saw a mass of blood pouring out of me.
They gave you up for dead.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they continued on the patrol. On the way back, the guy that I said, if something happened to me, you take charge of the squad. So he came in. And look out the window and didn't see my body there by the barricade. So he didn't realize to step up to see me, the barricade, see my body there, he stepped on me. And that's how they found me, because when that evening after I was wounded, it started raining.
So
I regained my consciousness.
So they take you. They find you, right? They find you and they take you to the hospital,
which was also destroyed, but it was still doctors operating in a basement. Yeah.
And was that the end of the fighting for you?
No, they all just barely sold out. The big wound was sold out. And another one, he, doctor, said in the ideal conditions I couldn't remove the bullet because it's lodged in your spine. If I did a condition, if I move it, made the wrong move, it would paralyze me from waist down. And he didn't have time to do it.
So just dressing out the wounds and you going back to the
fight? Yeah, and I was laying in the hallway, on a mattress on the floor. And this is the last time, I don't know how in the world my father found out that I was wounded. He came to see me and look at me, probably thought that I've never survived because he came down on his knee and he had tears in his eyes. And he was hiding. High commander officer in the Polish
army. He must have said a prayer and that helped and you survived.
Yeah. And this is the last time I saw my father. About a week later, I think it was about a week later. I was wounded the first week from the side of the upper at the barricade there. And then I was in that hospital maybe several days. And when I decided to return to my squad again, which I was using pain to get right. I found out that my father and my brother were dead. The German killed them. And I couldn't believe it. I kid myself. I think, why it could happen to anybody but not your family.
So you recovered only from a pretty bad wound that you
I was still
only to find out that your father and brother got killed.
So I was wearing civilian clothes then, and I went and snuck to the German line, went back home. I couldn't believe it. And a neighbor came out and he was very he was happy that I already knew, because he came and said, I have a bad news for you. I said, I already know my father and daughter are dead, right? So he gave me my father's wallet, his watch and his rings and my brother's religious medallion that he was wearing. And so I asked, can I, where are they buried? Because I still couldn't believe it. So he said, you sure you want to see your father's garden grave? I said, yeah. They were buried in a temporary grave in the courtyard of our condo where we were living. That's how I knew they were dead.
You know, I've always considered myself lucky, and the reason for that is that I'm the post-war generation, so I never really had to face the atrocities of the Second World War, including the Warsaw Uprising. If you forgive me, would like to go now jump ahead a little bit to the last days of the uprising and you getting
All right, I returned to my squad again.
Getting to your squad again.
And I found there were two replacements in my squad. And those two guys came from the area where I thought my mom and sister were. And they were across the street from that building. And they say the whole street was bombed. Systematically, the German used to take off from our own airport, and they bombed the building completely. And he said they couldn't possibly survive because even if they were in the basement, there was nobody to pick them up because the fight was still going on top of the ruin. So I knew they were both there.
So the uprising for you ended like for many others?
No, I still was on the last day of the uprising.
When
I was returning again, and the German arrested me by Gestapo. I got documents.
Okay. And you were taken prisoner?
And since I was lucky, because normally if you arrested by Gestapo, they would torture you, so would disclose other names. But they knew that the uprising was collapsed and the street was destroyed. They couldn't find the address or anything. So they shipped me exactly straight to the Stufa.
So, and then
in Prussia.
The camp, and then you got liberated
and then came
to the United States.
There was only 1 or 2 months, I remember, and they shipped me to Buchenwald, deep into Germany, the largest camp in Germany. And that's where I was liberated by
the Americans.
Right. And then I joined the military, American, as a constabulary force, as a translator in a constabulary force.
I'm pretty sorry, too, that we have to end this conversation. I know we could continue for many more minutes and hours. Mr. Gordon, thank you so much for coming down
thank
here.
Thank you.
And also, we'd like to thank Danusha Gordon, who's sitting here with us and listening. Your daughter. Thank you again. I hope we'll have a chance to continue this. Thank you so much for coming down here with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Posłuchajmy wiersza Juliusza Krzyżewskiego. Wiersz jest zatytułowany. Rozpoczyna się od słów nie wiem, pamiętać nie chcę. Juliusz Krzyżewski urodził się 28 stycznia 1914, a został zabity w czasie powstania 26 sierpnia 1944 roku. W czasie powstania jako zastępca dowódcy plutonu walczył na Woli, potem na ulicy Stawki i na placu Teatralnym. Zginął trafiony w czoło przez snajpera. A teraz wiersz. Nie wiem. Pamiętać nie chcę. Niech Bóg przeklęty przez was milion razy i na świadectwo wyzwany, błogosławiony szeptem, odwróci od nas swoje rany. My będziemy świadectwem. My, aniołowie boleści, my, bogowie aniołów, zbawiający i grzeszni. Popioły, precz z mistyczną gabałą, duch ujęty jest w ciało jak cięciwa łuk piętki, a pieśń ducha jak strzała drży napięta i prędka. My już Bogom dorośli i praw ludzkich niepomni, nad poziomem nicości ogromni. Że ogromni przemocą rządzą bólem i gniewem i mądrością, co oczy wypełnia po brzegi. Nam już tylko zniszczenie, śmierć zwierzęca i boska. Boże, odwróć i brzemień. Pozostań.
Piosenka dla tych, którzy nie dolecieli. Piosenka dla tych, którzy dolecieli. Antoniemu Tomiczkowi, Aleksandrowi Nikodonowi. Wiem, że bardzo chciałeś urwać gałązkę z drzewa nad Warszawą, pokazać ją kolegom pod niebem Brindisi. Piękniejszą niż cały włoski renesans, taką zieloną jak młodość, jak marzenia uwięzione w sowieckim obozie, gdzie trawa musiała smakować, bo szkorbut był pierwszy przed śmiercią. Przetrwałeś. Pamiętasz ten sen, jak mały harcerz szeptał ci do ucha uroczystą przysięgę? Obudziłeś się i znowu poleciałeś. Obiecałeś, że mu zrzucisz taką małą magiczną gwiazdkę, odznaczenie od polskich lotników całego świata. Ci, którzy uczyli cię, jak zdechnąć przy drutach kolczastych, strzelali teraz w plecy tym, którzy chcieli dopłynąć do brzegu śmierci na polsko-włoskim niebie. Przetrwałeś. I tak jak na początku wojny, tak i przy końcu mordowano nas po obu stronach rzeki. Nie miałeś czasu, żeby studiować Nerona. Wyleciałeś znowu. Ostrobramska modlitwa twojej matki nie dopuszczała śmierci, która tyle razy chciała wejść pod naszywkę na ramieniu z napisem Pola. Przetrwałeś. Pamiętasz ten sen, jak mała harcerka prosiła cię o lekarstwa i bandaże? I znowu poleciałeś. Obiecałeś, że jej zrzucisz taką magiczną chustkę do tamowania krwi. Prezent od polskich lotników całego świata. Ona zawiązała tę chustkę na szyi swojego chłopca, On z kieszeni koszuli pełnej krwi wyciągnął małą, magiczną gwiazdkę. I tak już zostali objęci. Nikt ich nie znalazł. Łamana zielona gałązka.